so just a little bit of an introduction. My name is Suchita. I'm the co-founder of LBB. Today, the only role I will play is that of the moderator. And hopefully, share a couple of dad jokes with you guys as we go along over the next hour. So that's me. I'm just going to be moderating today. The actual heavy lifting of the conversation will be done by my colleagues. There's Abhijit, who essentially leads brand solutions for us, and he works with a lot of our ad brand partners. He's going to bring a perspective in terms of, you know, what he's seen from the advertising space. There's Tanvi, who leads brand marketing for us, she's essentially responsible for LBB working on our own social media and our own channels and platforms and making them as engaging as is possible. So she will share insights and inputs from what we've seen on LBB itself. There's Akanksha, who leads all of content and content ops for us. And she's going to be, you know, giving you a couple of insights and behind the scenes on what she's seen happen on our webinar app as far as user consumption is concerned. And there's Akshita, who leads merchant onboarding and merchant growth. And she's going to be responsible in today's chat to basically tell you about new brands that are launching, interesting campaigns that are being run by a lot of, you know, emerging brands in India. And that's essentially the scope of it. So guys, when we put together our 2021 consumer and marketing trends report, our endeavor was just one, right? All of you guys who are either brand marketers, brand owners, or entrepreneurs, you know, or are leading marketing, etc., at different companies, we want you to have access to the A to Z of what we think consumers are going to be doubling down on this year, and also what platforms and products are going to be doubling down on this year. As far as LBB is concerned, we totally understand that 2020 was a bit of a wash, right? I mean, not the best year that we've experienced so far. But what was interesting about 2020, what was interesting about lockdown and then life post-lockdown is that it's led to a lot of permanent and semi-permanent changes as far as the Indian consumer is concerned and also as far as the Indian merchant is concerned. So two big things have happened. SMEs have finally woken up, right? Everyone has realized the importance of having some amount of digital presence and some amount of online presence. And they're actually tapping in to make sure as much of their catalog, you know, their inventory, etc., is accessible to users online, which has been fairly interesting for us to see on LBB. It's also led to a lot of changes as far as marketing is concerned for large brands, which we'll tap into in the latter half of today's conversation. On the consumer front, obviously, you know, consumers have been working from home. Consumers have been stuck at home attending Zoom calls, much like the one that we are attending right now. We've also seen a very interesting shift of consumers from categories like fashion, more so to categories like home decor. So we're going to talk to you about that today as well. All in all, last year was tough, but we do hope that, you know, all the positives that came out of last year, which is an increase in digitization for SMEs, large brands, are going out of more traditional methods of customer acquisition and experimenting with newer methods of customer acquisition. We hope these two big ones are here to stay. And we do hope the consumer, who is sort of excited by this message of vocal for local continues to shop locally and shop from interesting and emerging brands. So I'm going to start with, first and foremost, the category trends, right? The most interesting category trend and actually one of the more interesting categories has been fashion, which is kind of seen a bit of a haul in terms of, you know, how consumers think about fashion and where they want to spend their, you know, hard-earned money in terms of, you know, the things that they want to acquire and the things that they want to spend money on. I'm going to pull in my colleague Akanksha, who, you know, as I said, heads content ops for us. Akanksha, what did you see in 2020 last year, which was actually super interesting and which you see sort of percolating into, you know, key consumer trends in 2021?
I think to start with the first, you can see on that slide, the guide to the best vintage and thrift shopping. That was one of our best sellers for the entire year. And while India is not really a stranger to any sort of hand-me-down outfits or sort of a thing, it was really no surprise that when Vocal for Local sort of began to trend, that thrift shopping and the vintage boom began. It was not, it started with the sort of consciousness for the planet and slow fashion, but then it also evolved into when in a year where people had cutbacks, salary cuts, all those sort of things, it grew into a price-conscious sort of space as well. So I think people were a little bit sensitive about where they spent their money. If it was something that they would use on a regular basis, they would definitely go out and purchase it. But when it became something that they had to, it wasn't something they needed on a much more frequent basis, it became something that they would turn to thrift shopping, vintage shopping. And that also led to conscious shopping, which meant that they would want premium quality over fast-moving fashion. And this wasn't only for women, this held true even for men's, which diversified from just being shirts and tees into being hybrid kurta shirts, athleisure and variety of colors. Prints came in hugely. And I think so the thrift shopping, vintage shopping and conscious shopping all merged into one. And we saw that trend come up a lot in 2020. And I think Akshita will elaborate on how she sees that coming forward as well. And just a quick question over there, right?
So yeah. You brought up this really interesting point about like Indian prints, sort of being dominating the landscape, whether it's for women's wear or men's wear. Any interesting examples that you saw, any brands that you want to give a shout out to who've actually done a great job of capturing this trend?
I think for the local brands, I think Akshita will be the better person to do that. But places like M&S, H&M, Zara all brought in Indian prints. And it wasn't just for, obviously Zara, H&M don't do very Indian outfits as well. But it was interesting to see how they used Indian prints on non-Indian products. So whether it was dresses, jackets, trousers, palazzos, you saw it on everything. It was that sort of pop of color and prints that dominated across the board.
Another really interesting thing that happened in 2020 was, millennials either became pet parents, plant parents, or like actually got knocked up, right? Congratulations, Virat and Anushka. But another trend that we saw sort of pick up was this whole maternity wear, situation, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about that as well?
Yep, I think one interesting thing that we saw, even until maybe 2020, in the beginning of 2020, perhaps late 2019, in India, especially, it was hide the bump, just hide the bump one way or the other. But I think last year, slowly, it started becoming more about women, millennial mums who didn't stop going to work, who continued to live their lives. And they sort of wanted to just be themselves, body conscious. They were much more body positive and were not conscious about showing their bump. And I think because of that, it led to a very interesting change in how people looked towards maternity wear. And a fair number of brands did crop up. I think people highlighted Westside, again, H&M, all of them highlighted their maternity sections. So I think that was very interesting. That also in a sort of supplement to that was kids fashion. This whole concept of mommy and kids, wearing the same things, twinning, all that thing, all of that came back. And what we saw was, again, a shift from ethnic and usual outfits to much more contemporary, comfortable stuff.
Got it. Akshita, I want to pull you in because, I think one sort of, prediction that we made, even when we were thinking of our merchandising roster for 2021, is just how multifunctional fashion's becoming. So talk a little bit about, what is the psychology of this user? What are the specific items where you see them really spending money? And if you had, a crore to invest in an apparel business, right? What subcategory or category of apparel or even fashion for that matter would you pick up?
Suchita, with 2020, people got used to just being at home, be it work, be it the lockdown. So comfort really became the top priority as far as fashion was concerned, right? Talking about multifunctional fashion, be it clothes or footwear, is what people started looking for. And we saw that on our platform. We saw that with, other brands, the kind of collections that were coming out. So silhouettes that are professional for office, stretchy enough for your yoga mat or comfy enough for the couch were, the kind of silhouettes that people were looking for and people were buying. Pinterest calls it at flow, which is at leisure meeting elegance. But what I'm getting to is that, anything flowy, so be it flowy pants, casual jumpsuits, oversized outfits, anti-fits really became the new, go-to loungewear. And we saw this with respect to Shop on LBB. Also, a lot of brands started sending collections of, multifunctional outfits and footwear. But the point here is it was all with an Indian twist, which Akanksha mentioned. So be it men's or women's. So think of like midi dresses with ajrak prints by one of our really favorite brands called Rasleela, or I don't know if you guys have heard of this brand, but this upcoming brand called Rare Rabbit, they've introduced this new range of, you know, go-to loungewear for men. They're doing Ikat printed denim joggers. So interesting stuff coming up. But the point being is, I think multifunctional is where the investment is happening. That's what we've seen with brands. So it's multifunctional clothes or footwear along with Indian prints. That's my take for 2021.
This is just a quick mood board of, you know, what we expect to happen in 2021. Again, touching upon all the topics that Akshita mentioned, I want to get into home, which anyone who follows me on Instagram or, you know, anyone who looks at my shopping history on Shop on LBB knows is my single most favorite category. So Akanksha, was I the only one who went broke in 2020 because of spending too much money on home decor, or do I have other companions in this as well?
You have a lot of companions in this, though you're cut above everyone else, I think. So I think because people are spending so much time at home, we saw perhaps what would have been focused on fashion and apparel for going out shifting towards the home. People were trying to make their homes the place because they were spending so much time in it. In the beginning half of the year, we saw everything that was very much more functional. So your comfortable office chairs, your lamps to light up a desk, desks themselves, laptop desks, that sort of dominated. And it seemed like it would be the end of it, because once you set up your office office at home, we thought that would be the end of it. But it suddenly, sometime around May, June, it picked up, and then it moved away from the functional stuff to much more vibrant accessories and things that were well beyond what you would traditionally call just furniture. Diversity within home decor became an actual thing. It ceased to be functional at all. And I think while, you know, Pinterest has been saying that this whole Scandinavian look is going to be dominating, and while that may be true, perhaps in the Western regions, I think what is really going to trend in India is the other one, the other trend, which is granny chic or grand millennial, which sees, you know, lots of pops of color, accents in not monotone. So, you know, nobody was looking for a single or dual tone anything, whether it was couch or couches or any of their decor. It was much more, think Chumbak, you know, Chumbak actually brought out this style of having mismatched but very interesting and personality-driven home accessories. So bamboo, cane baskets, trays, anything that Nani had in her house is coming back into fashion.
Absolutely. And I think what you brought up is so interesting, because historically speaking, home decor has unfortunately, or actually by design, always been one of those categories that's been unbranded to a large extent, right? Like you said, you know, at least from a Delhi perspective, you've got your Kirti Nagar where you go to for furnishing, you know, you've got your Hosrani where you go to pick up your, you know, pots and planters. But now there are brands coming into everything. Akshita, when you think of, this individuality that's almost come up within home decor, what comes to your mind? What is really driving this millennial, you know, Indian customer vis-a-vis where they want to spend their money when it comes to their home?
Instagram has given everyone their own personality type. So now no one's anymore, sort of tied to what should look like a perfect home setting. And we've seen this on LBB as well. So the trend, that's going to be dominating 2021, according to me, is the whole mix and match trend. So we see a lot of home accessories move on LBB shops. So be it cushions, be it wall art, clocks, candles, dream catchers. I mean, what Akanksha said, right? Everyone wants to, you know, sort of reinvent their corner. They want to buy stuff which is easy to fix, they can play around with. I think fast home decor would be a big, big trend in 2021. And we've seen this with, merchants that have come on Shop on LBB. So be it Wicker Home Accessories from Opaque Studio or Macrame Wall Hangings by Macrame Corridor, Pendant Lights, another super interesting category, that we've seen move on our platform, by brands such as Earth Heart, Lafayette Lights, Rugs by The Rug Story. So I think all of these accessories combined together is something that's going to be trending in 2021.
So basically, if you're a home decor brand, you know, think outside of just the confines of furniture and really think into, you know, and think through what the, you know, quicker sort of moving consumption items can be for you. I want to sort of, you know, jump into now beauty and personal care, right? Obviously, you know, given that non-essentials were banned up till June, I don't know about you guys, but I tried everything from putting Veet on my upper lip for self-care to, you know, suddenly finding a newfound interest in a, you know, chumpy massage, which, you know, you're really not that used to. So as a customer who genuinely doesn't give a shit about beauty or self-care, as you can tell, I found myself actually really investing in self-care for a change. So Anakanksha, you mentioned, you know, in your top recommendations of 2020, you mentioned how, again, not just me, but this millennial customer, a little worried about going to a salon or a parlor, sort of took matters into their own hand and, you know, figured their own routine out. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so clearly you're the trendsetter. That's exactly what happened, right? DIY was everything this year. And I think what was very interesting to see was people, like you said, people were too afraid to go out. So everything came back into the house. And this was, it was an interesting mix to see how everything that is very traditionally Indian, including the ingredients, the methodology, somewhere along the way met very high tech. So on the one hand, you would be happy to be using Indian ingredients to sort of use as a face scrub. But then you also saw a lot of tech coming in terms of hair removal, hairstyling, men's grooming products. So it was very interesting to see how at home everything became the be all and end all of what we saw as in the beauty category. In fact, Nykaa's trend report sort of said that pampering, indulgent, feel good skin, hair, and bath and body products dominated. And this didn't include only your face oils and things like that. It also included aromatherapy, candles. So I think there was a shift in how you looked at beauty and skincare this year.
2020 was also the year, Akshita, where we saw a lot of makeup brands come up, right? Which was kind of weird because, you know, no one was really using makeup thanks to your, you know, Zoom calls and not having to, you know, go to office or have any external occasions. But we saw makeup pick up closer to Diwali, right? When your gifting period, etc. starts. And now, obviously, you've got everyone from Faye Beauty to, you know, Nebel to a billion other brands that are out there. What is your take on, you know, where makeup and Indian makeup brands at large are going?
So, you know, it's very strange that India being such a diverse country, we were always, being sold this one type of skin, which was fair. But I think now is the time when brands have really started tapping into this whole personalized range of products, be it skin, be it hair, be it body, makeup. So as per the vendors report, customers are looking for a made for me product, which is addressing a personalized need. So be inclusive would be sort of my advice to any beauty brand figuring it out, or trying to think of products for 2021. And then there are obviously brands like Skincraft, Vedix, they're all doing personalized skincare. So they'll analyze your skin and then they'll suggest products as per your skin type. But in all of this, a whole personalized range of products, customers, thanks to the pandemic, are also going back to their roots. They're very much aware of the kind of ingredients that they want to consume. So the whole I support this cause for my own good will be the customer attitude going forward. And we've seen that with brands and collaborations, in 2020. So Fab Alley India launched this whole India skincare line, which was, focusing on skincare made from all natural ingredients, or it was MyGlam, doing a collaboration with Manish Malhotra, and surprisingly all the products in that range had ingredients like haldi, kesar, cinnamon, ginger, and so on and so forth. We also Forest Essentials come out with the whole artisanal natural makeup line. So what I'm getting to is that one is the whole be inclusive, because finally everyone's acknowledged that in India there are different skin tones, different hair types, skin types to be catered to. But yes, going back to the roots, because people have realized the importance of our Indian ingredients. We've seen a lot of nostalgic ingredients come back, in products from various.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, nostalgia really seems to be a theme across the board, right? And it totally makes sense given, you know, the uncertain times. I think the millennial customer, especially, that's actually seen the most amount of change over the past, you know, 2-3 odd decades. You want to hold on to something that feels familiar, right? And that's where, you know, whether it's the Nani Ma chic look, or it's your Indian prints of fabrics, or, you know, your Kumkumadi, Tulsi, Aloe, all of those are making a comeback. Let's get into one of my favorite categories, right? Which obviously is snacks and drinks. Akanksha, this category was super, super interesting in 2020 because everyone either became a Insta chef or became a granola maker or like launched some FMCG company. So what did you see last year?
You know, despite all of it, it eventually came down to going back to your roots. So despite it all, you know, I think eventually, like we were just talking, nostalgia was hugely dominant even in this section. So whether it was the ingredients that were used or the actual products that came out of it, I think eventually what it all boiled down to was nostalgia. So if you look at the snacks, it was all about your makhana, chikis, ampapar, chakalis from across the country. And I think this was the year that khakras became cool again. And I think, so snacking just turned, it's flipped back a couple of years. And there you have it. It was all Indian snacks making this huge comeback. And to talk about your point of everyone being an Instagram chef, I think when everyone was done with the banana bread and the dalgona coffee, they just wanted to have something easy to do, which is why a lot of meal kits, easy, ready-to-cook stuff came up. And I don't think that it wasn't just you know, to make a quick fix. It was just healthy stuff. Slurp Farm, for example, does amazing pancake mixes. And I don't think it was just for this year. I think it's something, I mean, I'm sure Akshita will elaborate, but I think these kind of things are here to stay because convenience at the end of the day is what matters. I think it was a great year for Indian alcohol.
Goa had it continues.
Yeah, I hope so. Goa had a gin brand coming out every week, I think. Including one that launched a couple of days ago, which was called Clearly Good Gin. So I think it was very interesting to see how all of this matched up, but with this undertone of everything being healthy.
Got it. That's super interesting. And obviously, you know, a healthy immunity, that's the term of the day, right? In term of the year, because of course, people are still paranoid about, you know, their health, about COVID. And I've also realized how fleeting, these moments can be, right? And therefore, doubling up on health is important. Akshita, talk to me about this whole supplement space, man, because, you know, on LBB also, similar to with every good gin brand coming out, there's also a supplement brand sort of launching, right? We saw everything from power gummies to some, collagen brand, etc. launching. What's your take on this whole, you know, supplements, vitamin, you know, immunity, etc. space?
So, like we were discussing, I think more than ever, people have realized the importance of immunity and just keeping healthy in general, be it by consuming healthier products or just taking supplements. So I was reading this trend report, which is called the Top 5 Global Trends That Will Shape the Food Industry in 2021. I was reading that 50% of its customers that they surveyed, they all, sort of indicated that they want to, consume food and beverages that inherently contain some ingredients that improve immunity and energy. So there was this whole focus on whether I'm drinking, something like a kombucha, which improves my gut, or I'm consuming any food item. But immunity is basically at the back of their mind. So immunity strengthening products, including spices. So spices, again, was, something that I read in one of these reports, that you, again, want to go back to your roots. So you want ingredients, which your Nani Ma said, that are good for your gut and just, improve immunity. So such as ginger, turmeric, neem, they all have, come back. Even on LBB shop brands like Chic Nutrix, which do hair and skin tablets. So if you want bouncy hair, if you want clear skin, I mean, you have a tablet for everything. And with slightly bigger brands like an Akiba Superfoods, they've come out with weight management shots, immunity shots. So it's just like a neem shot that you can drink every day. And they claim that, it'll improve your immunity. So yeah, lots of interesting brands coming out in this space with, again, Indian ingredients.
Absolutely. Tanmay Bhatt, in fact, on the Open House episode also spoke about Man Matters apple cider vinegar that he's been using, for weight loss and weight management. I think this is a good sort of, you know, summary of the mood board that at least we expect for 2021, which is healthier drinks, more sugar-free, keto, gluten, etc. alternatives. People who thought keto and gluten and, you know, diabetic friendly was a trend, was a niche trend, they actually haven't realized how mass and globalized it's actually become, with consumers becoming, you know, more particular about what's going into their systems. So Abhijit, Tanvi, you know, one of the larger sort of trends has definitely been this obsession with all things micro-influencers, right? And even at LBB, we've used micro-influencers for ourselves, we've used them for our partner brands. Abhi, if I can bring you in, let's kick off with, you know, what were the interesting insights that you saw as far as micro influencers are concerned? And I won't say a shift from large guys to the smaller folks, but this, you know, sort of expansion in terms of the influencer pie that brands are now interested in.
So I think brands realize that they don't necessarily have to pay large sums of money to category A influencers with millions of followers to drive value for their products and services. And I think that in part happened, I think the shift also happened because of COVID, because of lockdown. You know, these larger influencers who are majorly in, you know, bigger cities, brands weren't able to sort of, you know, send out their products and they weren't really available. So these micro influencers really became sort of local voice for these brands. And I think they realize that, you know, what they lack in number of followers, they definitely make up in the kind of engagement they drive, you know, not to mention that they can come at a very affordable price. And they also retain a user base that sees them as an expert in their respective fields. What that does is that it again goes into that loop of driving higher engagement. And actually, they ended up getting a better value in less amount of money that they spend for their, you know, products and services.
Absolutely. And categories again, right? Because again, if you think of, you know, the influencer landscape, obviously food and fashion just by nature of the category end up having the maximum number of influencers. But micro influencers have been very interesting in your slightly, you know, niche categories as well. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that goes back to the fact that, you know, the kind of users they have, you know, they see them as an expert. So I think brands started reaching out to them, especially in the categories of, say, gaming, fitness, health, you know, beauty definitely was there, home and accessories. I think these were the larger categories that sort of drove a large part of micro-influencer trend that we saw in 2020. And I think that these are the few categories that will continue to sort of grow in 2021 as well.
Awesome. So Tanvi, let me pull you in, right? If you had to put on a brand marketer's hat, you know, which is a role that you serve for LBB, what is a use case of micro-influencers and what am I substituting when I choose to work with micro-influencers, you know, over something else?
All right. Thank you. So Sujitha, I'll just pick up from where, you know, Abhi left, right, where he said that there is a lot of trust building that happens and there's a lot of social proof that, you know, micro-influencers bring to the table. Also, another thing I would like to mention is that until now, it was brands giving a lot of credibility to these micro-influencers. However, moving forward, we are, I think, as brands going to depend on micro-influencers to give us a lot of credibility because the three main things, you know, the main thing that people usually depend on micro-influencers for is one, that their content is absolutely authentic. Second is that you end up getting a really high engagement. And third is that there is a lot of relatability aspect to it, right? Also, I mean, if you look at brands like Garnier, if you look at even the likes of Nike, Amazon, there is one person I would like to quote here who is the founder of Filter Coffee. This girl named Aditi Deora, she very well said that we are going to see an increase in demand for the influencer commerce trend, which is simply letting your influencers drive a lot of traffic to your website. Like Abhi said, that there aren't a lot of brands that have huge amount of influencers that they can depend on, which is why they often go to micro-influencers to drive traffic to their website. And I think that is definitely something that we'll see a lot more of moving forward in 2021.
Absolutely. Micro-influencers almost becoming, you know, the equivalent of banner ads, especially on platforms like Instagram and YouTube that count on them, you know, to grow their own reach and, you know, DAU to MAU and all of that. Let's segue into community generated content, because, you know, especially now with platforms becoming so like noisy, brands have really started leveraging their, you know, their user community, their evangelists and fans to sort of become their cheerleaders very publicly. Abhi, we worked on a bunch of super fun campaigns, you know, specifically with community generated content for brands like Philips, Neutrogena, etc. So tell our listeners about, give an example, in fact, of a really interesting implementation of community generated content.
I think, Sushita, let me just start by saying that, community generated content has become sort of a key driver for us in the past year. I think we have worked in varied categories and different brands when it comes to actually getting, content out of users. And this happened in large part because, brands have realized that the content is authentic. They can use it on their social platforms. It just boosts conversion. And it has a very high trust value with whoever is watching it. And in that sense, I think one of the larger campaigns that I can talk about is Philips, which is a consumer durable brand. And the idea was to amplify their existing sort of a campaign, which was around Khushiyon Ki Ladi, to reach out to people and ask them how they are spreading happiness during Diwali. And we got almost 5,000 plus, user-generated content from LBB community. And these content pieces were then sort of used to highlight the brand on social media. And we just saw we saw almost twice the engagement we usually get on a branded post. So the fact that it doesn't look branded, the fact that it comes from an actual user, it just gives it a high trust value. It just boosts conversion. And those content pieces go a long way in sort of building trust with your audience.
Absolutely. And Tanvi, we've worked on a lot of really interesting campaigns even for ourselves in Shop on LBB, right? Where we've kind of used, user-generated content and leverage that to drive better return on ad spend. So when you look ahead, right, talk to us a little bit about how you see brands creating UGC.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I would definitely, this is an observation that we've made, right, which is I feel the internet is now unbundling into micro communities. And I think as a brand, it has become important for us to tap into each of those communities while also making sure that we are very, we are being very relevant and we are being very relatable, right? A lot of times we see that the whole purchase and sell method, the traditional way of selling, is no more going to work. Users are going to look at a lot more value that they can get from customers, right? I would really like to give a brand's example here, which is Chumba, and they had followed these four steps very well, which was designing a concept, making sure that you know what exactly it is that you want out of a particular campaign, then going into engaging and amplifying your audience, right? Whenever you are seeking something out of your consumers, what is it that you are giving back to them? Even if they are in the form of reviews, make sure you incentivize those reviews, right? Let there be a sort of, are you giving them recognition for the review that they have written? Are you giving them something back in return for the reviews that they have written? You know, these little things that matter. I think Chumbak did it very well, where they, in their Diwali and even Christmas campaign, they asked people to participate in their campaign by designing or styling their different corners of their houses. They then took the best of those and then they put them up on their social media platforms.
And even on our app and our website, in fact, to the point that you made, whenever a customer drops a review or, adds an image, they get LBB perks, which, they can use as discounts the second or the third time that they transact. So you're totally right, where every step of the content creation journey, there has to be some carrot, right? Some incentive given for users, to take it up a notch. Last two sections of this, final section, and the more exciting one is, finally brands have woken up. People are not only investing in long form content, but everything from, reels to short form videos to, virtual experiences. Every single possible way of engaging with users is now being tapped into. So Abhi, talk to us a little bit about, this whole thing of digital events and how, just when you thought webinars were getting boring, you still have users signing up for unique experiences that are digitally enabled. So give an example and also, predict a little bit in terms of where you see 2021 landing up.
Yeah, so I think we started with, brands and publishers like us just trying out sort of different formats of getting people online for a live event. But I think what ended up sort of working was interactive sessions. So wherever, you know, there was a possibility for users to sort of interact, become part of the conversation, wherever they could try out the products, those sort of interactive sessions saw a lot of stickiness. People, stood around for the entirety of the event. Going into 2021, I think interactive sessions will sort of keep on happening until the very end of this year because of the kind of situation we definitely are in. I think one example that really stood out for us this year was obviously the kind of approach we did, but how we were able to sort of drive interaction between the brand and the consumers. And that example is of Neutrogena, wherein the idea was to drive sampling, but also get people to sort of try out the product in real time and give a real time feedback. So there was this this entire event about doing the workshop, which I think a lot of brands did. But I think we figured out that if we were able to send out the samples of Neutrogena to these people who have signed up, I think they'd be more interested in actually trying it out, giving the real time feedback, which the brands can also sort of take back and build on it. And I think Neutrogena was a great example to not just get people online, get them sort of be interactive in the session, but also drive sampling.
Absolutely. And I think, just taking sampling, which is fairly broken even from the retail landscape, whether it's, general trade or modern trade, and enabling that and bringing that online is a super interesting phenomena that we saw. Tanvi, now, Reels, there's that Feel It, Reel It. There's, YouTube going into short form video content. Obviously, TikTok was banned, but then as a consequence of that, there were 20 other Indian companies that sort of came up. When you think of formats, right, what are the ones that are exciting you, as given that you're a brand marketer as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, see, fortunately or unfortunately, a brand has to follow a particular trend. And I would definitely say that, we would not like to steer away from Reels or from YouTube Shorts. But at the same time, I would like to mention that there are a lot more touch points, right, apart from social media or apart from a specific platform. Look at, for example, the rise of newsletters. So many people are now depending on newsletters to, basically showcase their content or even as a form of consumption. Look at podcasts, for example. There are so many people starting podcasts. There is so much consumption happening on that platform as well. There are LinkedIn stories that are going to now come up. So I think there are a lot of ways in which there is scope for brands to put out content and for them to reach out to their customers on different platforms. I think definitely like the rise of newsletters, podcasts, even LinkedIn stories coming up. That is something that we are definitely looking forward to and, have already rather started making plans in those directions.
Kind of like a brand can have, can almost have like a split personality, right? Like you can be a certain type of person on LinkedIn. You can have another personality on a podcast, and you can have a totally different personality when you're creating reels on Instagram. And I think the great thing about that is brands will become more multidimensional as opposed to, the clear tenets and the checklist that brands usually operate with. So hopefully there's more flexibility on that front as well. I want to move to the last section, which is content first performance marketing. And Abhijit, I think, as folks like you and me who end up engaging with a lot of brands, talking to a lot of brand managers and brand owners, obviously when people think of digital, they think of performance, right? And in an age of like Facebook and Amazon and Google and, display ads and ROAS on everything, it becomes difficult to break through that clutter up until last year when we actually saw brands use content very intelligently to drive, either leads, transactions or whatever, key metric that they had identified. The number that you've given over here is that at LBB, we saw a 90% increase in content-led performance marketing. What are brands thinking when they do content-led performance marketing? And could you also define what content-led performance marketing is?
Yeah, so I think traditionally, I think content was always sort of, connected with driving impressions, especially. And I think that was the game that marketers always sort of played. But with the diminishing marketing budgets, and the need to optimize every single dollar spent, the return from content marketing became focused towards driving revenue, driving ROI, driving people back back to websites, driving CTR, and that sort of an approach happened with content. And I think largely LBB has always been a content platform, but I think the conversation last year changed that I did not just want impressions to be sort of sole metric for me to gauge the performance, but rather I would say how many people have sort of bought the product, how many people have came back to my website. And I think that was a slight, like a big shift that happened, last year. And I think the ability for content to, A, tell a story, B, educate customers to sort of, educate them on the overall product and services. The idea that it also builds trust, the idea that it has a longer shelf life, the idea that it has a sustained traffic. All of this sort of comes into play when it comes to content marketing. And that's the reason why this year and going forward, content performance marketing is going to be a huge hit with everybody, all the marketers.
Absolutely. And actually, what we've seen is some of the more intelligent brands are actually creating content, slicing it into multiple different units and actually pushing, those units out in different directions. An example being, UpGrad, we recently worked on a couple of campaigns for. So Tanvi, when you look ahead, right, what are the categories that you see sort of doubling down on performance, on content-led performance marketing? Because obviously there are some categories that are naturally very aligned to content creation, and there are others, say, for example, like EduTech and say auto, which may not be, right? So what are your two cents on, the kind of categories that you see really jump on this, content-led performance marketing trend?
Gaming, definitely. I think is one. I also think to some extent, probably, EduTech, like you said, you already mentioned, but to some extent, I think beauty will also be one that, especially skincare in beauty, we will be able to see a good rise in that. Also, I think it all circles back to, what other moments are also you tapping into, right? For example, even something like, I think even entertainment industry for that matter. I mean, and I would like to give Amazon's example over here, where they just, remember this whole Rahul Bose moment where a tweet went viral about him mentioning that, a luxury hotel charged him, say, about 440 rupees for a pair of bananas, where they just jumped in and said that, oh, really? But Prime membership just charges, we just charge you 129. So there are a lot of aspects under, even content-led performance marketing. And I think it highly depends on brands being absolutely alert about what are those moments that they must tap into, because this is the time when everybody wants instant fun, right? It reels are all about instant consumption. Everything has to happen in real time. We can't wait for, there to be a right time for us.
No, absolutely. And you brought up such a great example on, moment-based marketing and using every content moment, whether it's on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, whatever else, and leveraging that to your benefit. This covers the, more sort of like direct presentation part of what we had to cover. I'm going to sort of get into a couple of, questions over here and shoot a few questions your way. Guys, all of you on the call who have either just joined us or have been listening to us for a period of time, do drop in your questions. I'll be able to, make sure that I take them directly. I'll just quickly change the settings. There we go. So keep sending your questions my way. More than happy to take them on. So Akshita, I want you to jump in over here because, through Shop on LBB and even through just LBB at large, we guys are introduced to new brands every single day, right? It almost seems like there's 10 new brands coming up every single day. If I gave you like $1 million, right, and told you to cut checks to five brands, I know I'm putting you on the spot over here, but what are the five brands that you would pick up and who would you sort of invest in if you had to wear that hat and wear that lens?
I think, Suchita, more than brands, I would kind of put my monies in certain subcategories, as we would like to call it. So I think fashion and home are these two categories where I'll probably larger umbrella categories I'd like to put my monies in. But if I was to talk about fashion, like I mentioned, I think Indian prints is going to be my biggest bet. with all of those flowy outfits and, you know, from like bed to desk outfits. But yes, I think Indian prints would be one sort of category that I'll bet on. And I think we have some beautiful brands, and it'll be unfair to just sort of call out, you know, one or two brands. So I'll stay away from that. So that's one sort of category. And if I were to talk of home, I think home accessories, definitely home accessories, because you've seen the smallest brands come out with accessories during this time. And even brands like, you know, Nicobar, Good Earth, slightly expensive brands. But again, people are buying ceramics from there, table accessories, wall accessories. So it's all about just revamping, reinventing your, you know, little corners to make it look cozy, to make it look work friendly. So I think, yeah, those will be like my biggest two bets.
Awesome. I'm going to ask a question now to Tanvi and Akanksha, right? And these questions come from Divya, who's asking, how do you grow a community of brands, right? So for example, and Divya, please correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm a brand, how do I grow the community around me? And how do I make sure that, you know, the community that I work with, you know, keep sort of compounding at a certain rate, because that's also critical, right? You don't want communities to be niche. So Tanvi, ASD, Abhi, do you guys want to jump in on that question?
So I think, I mean, obviously, there is a need to sort of grow the communities. I think it's important that, you know, we keep continue growing the consumer base. And I'll just give you an example of what Mamaearth did, right? They have this huge community of moms that they reach out through WhatsApp. And I think it's one of a kind of a marketing effort that Mamaearth brought that really helped them sort of become top of the mind, especially in their, you know, core target audience. And I think the fact that, you know, they started with only, say, 1,000 moms, and now they have a community of 10,000 moms, I think it speaks volume, because I think, you know, that kind of interest, it draws other people in, you know, especially because word of mouth marketing goes a long way getting people into the business and getting them interested. And I think that is one of the ways. I mean, you have to keep engaging with them. You have to keep incentivizing them. You have to be genuine with them. You have to, obviously, you have to have a good brand story. You need to have a good product. Like, all of those things go. But you need to keep engaging with them on a regular basis. And I think that will have a compounding effect.
And you brought up a really important point, which is, you know, a community shouldn't only be looked at as a way for you to, you know, get content or whatever else. They should actually be looked at to get feedback. And I think that is super, super important, right? Because who's best to hold you accountable to your, you know, values or to your, you know, true goals than, you know, your top 1,000 fans. In fact, you know, A16Z has this fantastic article, Andreessen and Horowitz's newsletter. They have this fantastic article on, you know, the top 1,000 fan sort of philosophy. So which all of you guys on this call should totally check out. Tanvi, yes, anything you'd like to add there?
No, I think Abhi's covered it. But I think the reciprocal thing of it's not that you can look to your community as only as a consumer, like you said, right? I think it's very reciprocative about how you can they can hold you up to those standards that you sort of believe in, and then they become the voice of they become the face of your brand. So I think it's something that we try to do at LBB as well. Wherein we have niche groups, and we've started our own WhatsApp groups as well. And this is a much more direct and you know, personalized sort of relationship that you can have with your users and consumers, which more and more is being called your community rather than actually a consumer or a user.
Absolutely. And I think Akanksha just alluded to a really interesting exercise that we did. So those of you on the call who are, you know, brand marketers on LBB, we actually, you know, took five of our team members and our editors and we asked our users to sign up to be a part of their WhatsApp group. So Akanksha, in fact, has her own WhatsApp group. And, you know, once a week, she sends out WhatsApps in terms of recommendations for, you know, what our user community can do. And we saw that work really well and in a very interesting way in terms of not just driving, you know, page views and all of that, but also getting user feedback, right, in terms of what they like and what they don't like. I'm going to ask Akshita you a question now, which is, you know, people think, you know, millennials are like hip and cool and, you know, are like down to try the coolest D2C brand that's out there. But obviously, one thing that, you know, we know for a fact is millennials, which is essentially users who are largely in between about 20, you know, 2, 23, all the way up to 35, 36, they're actually very Chindi. So question, over there, which Niharika has asked as well, which is how much do millennials actually spend? And are they coughing up big bucks when it comes to things that, interest them? Or is this user very, very price conscious still?
So interesting question. So what I would like to add in here is millennials love to spend. And it's great because that's why platforms like us make money. But, and thank God for that. But yes, they love to spend money, but they would also, they spend money on different things. So to call them chindi, I don't think so that's the right term, because chindi would mean that they spend lesser money. But I think what we've seen work is that they're looking for interesting options to buy. So if I were to tell a millennial that, hey, this is like a really cool brand of coffee, because guess what? If you post a picture about this coffee on your Instagram and tag a friend, they'll send that coffee to your friend. So Slay Coffee's recently started doing, gift coffee to your friend. And every time you order the coffee, you can, gift it to a friend. So I think giving them interesting options is what kind of, gets them to spend money. They're looking for the next cool thing to buy. So if I were to tell them that, hey, like move away from Skippy peanut butter, because I'm going to get you a Happy Jars original, like only peanut, all natural butter, they're down to try it. So I think that whole, the point here being that they want to be cool. They want to stand out in a certain way. So I think giving them options really helps, and they will definitely spend money. Like there's no doubt in that. And we've seen that in our categories, even in home decor, I've seen millennials spend a lot of money because they've suddenly found this really cool looking light in the shape of a quirky shape, but they're down to try it because it just looks cool. It helps them like stand out and makes their home look cool. So that would be my take on it.
Millennials do have a higher threshold for trust. I think recently I was reading a study where it stated that, and I'm not sure how much true it is, but it stated that millennials have less than 1% trust on branded advertisements. Yet they are driven to, make better choices when it comes through a form of a recommendation or from a source like influencers whom they can trust. So, I mean, if we give them that opportunity to sort of educate themselves about a new product, I don't think they end up being chindi. I think they end up spending a lot of money.
Absolutely. In fact, this one term that we guys use internally at LBB is this term called accelerated signaling, right? Where in our parents' generation, signaling came from, where you stayed, what car you owned, if you had a fancy watch or not. But, millennial signal bases everything, right? From my ragi pancake in the morning by Slurp Farms to, my coffee from Toffee Coffee Roasters to my earrings from Shop Loon. Anything that you own becomes a way for you to signal that you're aspirational, that you're doing well for yourself. Or even if the signaling isn't monetary, sometimes the signaling is also to sort of align yourself with the community, right? So we see a lot of users signal them being interested in health, which obviously isn't tied to a certain dollar purchase, but is basically tied to this way of life. So signaling has seriously accelerated, and the smallest things, from the perfume you're wearing to the food you're eating to just where you're spending time, and to the point that Tanvi made, and I'm guilty of this, but just look at the amount of signaling we all do when we talk about books that we're reading or podcasts that we're listening to, right? So all of these small objects have become a way to signal. Last couple of questions that I'm going to take. Sarthak, you've asked, has LBB used platforms like Discord rather than WhatsApp to engage their younger audience? What do you think is the scope of Discord? I'd actually highly recommend that you listen to the episode with Tanmay Bhatt on LBB's open house, because he is super, super, super bullish on Discord. He actually showed me Discord for the first time, though I'm obviously familiar with the platform. We haven't had a chance to play around with it. For LBB, our users slightly older, so our user typically is in between 26, 27, all the way up to 35, 36. So we haven't, and Discord, you know, is definitely a platform that taps into your slightly more Gen Z-esque user. So we haven't, tapped into Discord yet. But I do think it is an absolutely fantastic platform, especially after, you know, Tanmay and I sort of ran through how you can create your groups and sub-communities and this, that, and the other. I think it's an absolutely fantastic platform. I do think the thing with, you know, newer platforms that are coming up, you know, whether it's Discord or it's Substack or or even Clubhouse for that matter, which again operates on this principle of, you know, smaller communities within a larger platform. I think the integration really has to be as seamless as is possible. And I know I'm dropping a lot of, you know, garbage marketing jingo while, you know, while I say that, but the thing with these platforms is, you know, the thing with Clubhouse, the thing with Substack or Discord is you cannot push your brand, right? Because the second you start pushing your brand, you're immediately taking away from what that particular product or platform is about. In fact, actually, I think what would be interesting to see is how a platform like Instagram navigates a brand versus creator versus consumer, because somewhere there, you know, they've got these three, you know, large communities of users using their platform, which is, you know, brands, creators, as well as consumers. And the lines are sort of blurring everywhere, right? Consumers are becoming creators, creators are becoming brands, and vice versa. And I think with lines getting more and more blurry, the real question to answer for a lot of brands, us included, is, you know, how do we make sure that we don't only stay top of mind and relevant, but are actually able to add some value to that platform ourselves? So we haven't experimented with Discord too much, to be fair. Not entirely our user base, which is, you know, typically female millennial, isn't necessarily on this platform. So I haven't had a chance to you know, play around with that too much. But if you've tried stuff on Discord, do share that with us, man. More than happy to learn from you. Okay, guys, we have crossed our time. We're at 6:05 now. We're going to, you know, bid you guys adieu. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope this was super helpful for all of you. If you enjoyed the session, give us a shout out on Twitter @FromLBB or on Instagram. Tag us @LBB for business. Sorry, Kanak, I hope I got that correct. My name is Sujita. My colleagues over here are Akshita, Akanksha, Tanvi, Abhijit. We've all had an absolutely fabulous time putting together the report for you. We hope you had a great time going through it. If you guys have any questions about the report, you want to brainstorm with us, you want to run ideas by us, please reach out to any of us, on LinkedIn or on Twitter or on Instagram. I'm more than happy to brainstorm with you. If you're a local brand or if you're any brand at all, we'd love to hear from you. So, reach out to us. If you go to our website, on the top right corner, you'll see a partner with us section and a, you know, merchant.lbb.in page. So reach out to us there. I am pretty accessible. You can reach out to me. I'm on Suchita@lbb.in. So anything you need, hit us up. More than happy to help you with your brand journey and with your brand growth. Thank you so much.